Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Nice. That was with compromised lung capacity, people. That's how strong.
I just go until it's you cut out.
You know what that means. It's the Mark Order Podcast. Joe has it in his contract that he doesn't have to do 2 weeks in a row with Ryan. So it's just me and Ryan tonight. And I feel itchy being on the right side when I'm hosting, but it is what it is. It's fine. I'm not logged in today, so I can't drag myself. But see, that just feels right. Hey, I'm a better friend than some people, okay? I could threaten to set you on fire, all right? There could be. A lot that happened on tonight's AEW Dynamite, including a tag time limit draw, which was excellent. A great women's tag to close out the show. But we've got a lot to talk about. And most importantly, you guys know that Ryan is a student of the game, of all the games, really. And part of being a student is keeping up with your reading and your writing and your arithmetic. And Ryan's real heavy on the first. I know this. The guy, he's a reader. And Ryan, you've been reading some American classics, I would say. Why don't you tell the good people what you got into?
Oh, I'm telling the good people what I got into. So I'll give a little background as to why I even got to this book, so you don't think just I'm insane. No, I am insane. Last night I was watching a show called Quizplex on Love Wrestling's YouTube channel. It's a fun little quiz show. If you haven't watched it, you should check it out. They bring on a bunch of indie wrestlers and they do quizzes.
It's the best of the best.
You can donate to either have someone win or Wheel Chaos, but the donations go to charity. So it makes you feel good about giving money because it's, you know, for a good cause. And one of the questions referenced a book from WWE history. And I'm going to show the cover of the book. I'm getting still going to use this new StreamYard thing where they don't, you know.
Yeah, everything's so weird back here now.
Yeah. Here is the book. Big Apple Takedown. WWE novel.
A novel is my favorite part of this whole thing. Is a WWE novel. Has that novel you've been working on got a... Yeah. Compelling protagonist.
So you may ask yourselves, well, what is this? Is this a book about pro wrestling? I say, nay, nay. It is not a book about pro wrestling. No, no, no. Sure, it
when
stars
I
pro wrestling.
Saw the cover. I did not immediately go, oh, I bet this is about the art of professional wrestling in some way.
Correct. It is about WWE wrestlers, sure. But see, these WWE wrestlers in 2001 get drafted into the NSA, I should say. And so straight forward to 2006, these wrestlers are full-on NSA agents. And we're talking Triple H, Stone Cold Steve Austin, Torrey Wilson, Batista, Chavo Guerrero. I think others are referenced, but they're the big ones.
Now, Chavo's an amazing shout. Like Stone Cold, yeah. Triple H, you kind of figure. Chavo, fantastic.
It, quite frankly, is one of the worst books I've ever read in my life. I can't even pretend it's good. It's so bad. The premise was always going to be bad. I get that. But you're saying that you would think in a... So these wrestlers are secret NSA agents because wrestling goes all over the country, sometimes all over the world. Who better to act as these agents? So you would think okay, they're going to use their star power to like get into places they shouldn't be able to get into. Again, I say nay, nay. No, no. They're undercover most of the time. Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Undercover during the Attitude Era?
Or directly after? Correct. Stone Cold Steve Austin is in a long-term undercover mission that doesn't get revealed to the spoilers, doesn't get revealed to the end of the book. Now, I understand wrestling overall can be niche at times, but Stone Cold is not a niche figure. He is a known, like, especially because this would have been post-Attitude Era when he was the biggest guy in the world.
Yeah, of course.
But somehow he is secretly hidden. Triple H, no one questions who this guy is. He's just always able to pull off his mission. He's the
unseasonably tan with constantly wet hair, as most NSA agents are.
Correct. And he's the main protagonist, I would say. Tori Wilson at least puts on a brown wig to try to hide her identity. I will say the book doesn't treat her much better than the Divas were treated in that era.
No way. I'm shocked.
So, one, she's obviously constantly using her body to get what she needs. She is the only one who's potentially recognized for who she is by some young men being like, that has to be her. So what she does is she turns her back to them and hopes that they just focus on the curves of her body instead of trying to focus on who she is. And I quote the book as saying, well, if you think this feels uncomfortable, this is nothing compared to after a bra and panties match. As if that's okay.
Does she have quote unquote supple breasts in the book? How close are we just getting to a full on porno?
I don't think supple breasts is ever mentioned, but obviously her cleavage is referenced.
Oh, fantastic. Okay.
Perfect. There is almost no point at which any of these superstars are in peril except Tori Wilson. She,
of course.
She does put up a bit of a fight, but gets knocked out with something, and then Stone Cold saves her. It's like, it's never even, she's never even at risk. It so quickly happens.
Where can I find this book? I need to.
Amazon Kindle for $5. For $5.
$5. They should pay you $5 to read that shit.
Vince is a big character in it as well, I have to warn you. Because, you know, the NSA is not going to approach these wrestlers directly. They're going to go through Vince. And Vince is going to coordinate everything, and he's going to be smarter than other people. He does say, this is great shit at some point.
With this, who was it? Randy Josephs?
Rudy Josephs.
Rudy Josephs. That's a Vince McMahon pet name, we think, right?
It does have the feel of like
it's got a ghostwriter feel to it.
Or No Holds Barred, where like he rewrote the whole movie. It has that feel to it that Vince got his hands on it and he rewrote it. Again, I stress, awful book. Chavo does the hacking though, so at least we get Chavo being the hacker.
That rules. I'm in on that.
These wrestlers kick everyone's ass because, you know, a pro wrestler, they're legitimately the toughest men that ever walked this earth.
It sounds a little bit like Team America, but serious. Like, not with the political allegory, but the same stupidity is the feeling that I get.
That's accurate. That's very accurate. That you know what it reminds me of, actually? It's if you took a shitty CBS crime drama and mixed it with any Hulk Hogan movie.
That tracks.
What this is. It is one of the worst books I've ever read. I read it quickly, thank God, because it's not a hard read. Again, though, I can't get over, and I'm going to stress this enough, the biggest conceit of the entire book is that no one recognizes these wrestlers.
I love that. Like, wrestlers wouldn't stand out in a crowd just to, in general. And then on top of that, it's like right after the Attitude Era, and nobody recognizes Stone Cold is phenomenal stuff.
And then no one recognizes Triple H. No one recognizes Stone Cold. No one looks at Batista and goes, what the hell is going on?
What's going on with that guy?
It is. If you want to waste $5 and read a really bad book, I would say you won't get worse. But also, I understand books aren't like movies where people will just go out of their way to watch. I mean, to read something bad. They, I guess because it takes up more time, they don't want to waste it. It is everything you think it would be. Again, never in peril, except for Tori Wilson. There's never any doubt this is going to work out in the wrestlers' favors. They are smarter than everyone. They are tougher than everyone. They got the whole thing down. It's
pro wrestling propaganda.
Yeah. Triple H makes fun of someone for a fake tan at some point.
That's delightful because, yeah.
So Pieces asked, is there a series of these books? So I looked to see like what else this writer has done. And unfortunately, it's just the Star Trek Starfleet Academy based on the movies, the new movies.
Interesting.
Oh, wait, no, I lie. He also did the novelization of The Marine.
Oh, perfect. So this is someone that Vince hired then.
Oh, 100,000%.
I love it. Well, get to your books, people. Get to reading. Okay, put this in all the schools. Because this sounds fantastic. And people need to know that wrestlers are A, very easily camouflaged into a crowd, and B, smarter than everyone, and C, stronger than everyone, and D, just better than everyone. Just better than everyone. So I see people in the chat. I expect Lord Kevin, Matthew Hooks, Taylor Cannon, Trey, Pieces, Big G, Scott George, Hooks, Greg Terry, LeBron. I expect everybody. Kylie in the chat. I expect all of you to order this book for $5 off of Kindle. We'll do book reports next week. It'll be fantastic. Kylie, why are you having a bad night? I'm sorry, girl.
This book won't help.
This book will not. Unfortunately, this book will make it so much worse. But I can only hope that AEW writes something comparable. Who would be AEW's NSA agents? Obviously, MJF.
MJF, Hangman.
Hanger. But Hanger, like, actually could assimilate. Like Wardlow, I feel like.
Okay, yeah, so we got to do it. So Wardlow, MJF. I'm trying to think of people who just stand out. Powerhouse Hobbs.
Like Darby Allin, just as presented.
Yes. Like
Luchasaurus as presented.
Never doubting who these people are.
Orange Cassidy is great. I love it. It's just the conglomeration. Is this NSA infiltration.
And that's actually another point. These wrestlers were during the point of wrestling history in the 90s where they still looked insane. Like they have yet to, like, they hadn't fully transitioned over to like more realistic looking people.
Oh yeah. No, this was like prime post steroid era shit. Like this was all about that.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. Amazing. Well, thank you for wasting your time so that we could talk about this today. How did it come up on the Love Wrestling show?
It was a trivia question.
Okay.
And they said, what books, what wrestlers were mentioned in the book? And then you had to guess two of the wrestlers mentioned.
Okay. Reasonable. Because even if you didn't know about it, you could make some stabs in the dark about like who was there at that time.
Exactly.
Well, that is phenomenal. And thank you. How long did it take you to read it?
A couple hours. It is a quick read.
Oh, man. A couple hours. You'll never get back. But a couple hours spent to give us the amusement of knowing about it. God bless you, Ryan.
It is bad. It is very, very bad.
Tim McFowell, you joined just a little too late. We were talking about... Can you pull up the picture again?
Yep, hold on.
We were talking about this WWE novel by Dandy Chiggins. Who was it by?
Rudy...
Rudy something?
Rudy Josephs.
Rudy Josephs. Yeah, Jeff Grayton's in the chat. That's a new name. Thanks for hanging out. We're going to talk all about that with Hanger and MJF. That was wild. They're going arson for arson with those two. You don't have to if it's too much.
I got it.
Oh, no. The Big Apple Takedown, a WWE novel by Rudy Josephs. A Simon & Schuster. Like an actual publisher did this. Damn.
Oh, yeah. This was fully published.
My God. They put the right person on the cover.
Well, yeah. What are you going to put? Stone Cold on there?
I mean, Tori Wilson.
Yeah, Chavo. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Chavo's not just in the book. He's the star.
Hell yes. Hell yes. Hacker. Hacker Chavo. Well, we can only hope that AEW produces something so great. We are going to switch gears. Thanks for hanging out. We're going to remind you to subscribe to this YouTube channel if you haven't already. We're going to remind you to leave a thumbs up on this video if you haven't already. I'm going to cheaply plug my own YouTube channel, at Miss Kate Fabe, on YouTube. Released a video of the people that I think are like next up for an AEW push there earlier today. But let's talk some AEW. Before we get into Dynamite, some newses and some notices. A free agent signing, one that honestly surprised me, but was glad to see Ace Austin joining AEW, making his debut on Collision against Ricochet, which was great. And shortly after that, announced as All Elite. I had thought because of his presentation and the dire need in NXT for men's single stars, he might head to NXT. I thought, like, with the whole card thing he does, like, I felt like NXT would probably ruin it, but it seemed like the kind of wrestler they'd be interested in. And they have such a need, I thought they'd pay him something comparable to, like, an Ethan Page. Ricky Saints is probably making, like, a lot. But I was happy to see this. He's in tremendous shape. Everyone was like, this is great news. And also, my God, the man's quads are bursting out of his tights. But Tim McFowell is saying that he's been a huge Ace Austin fan since before the pandemic. He's so good. He is great. And the tag team with him and Chris Bay was fantastic before he got injured and the work that they were doing there. It was also reported on Fightful Select that Chris Bay's contract would have been also coming to an end at about the same time, but obviously he had a not just career changing, but life changing injury. So that'll look different, but he's being paid in accordance with his contract, which is great news. But this is great news if you're AEW. And I also like that they've been much better about people immediately having stuff to walk into. So that part rules as well. Your thoughts on Ace Austin? And do you have any playing cards with just like a Rye guy on them?
I should. I need more. I mean, need more goods.
Hell yeah.
I was shocked. Not in a bad way. He's awesome. I just didn't see it happening. Like, I don't, like, it wasn't talked about at all.
Yeah, it was kind of under the radar too, because he was a free agent and then it was just quiet. So yeah, that was a surprise for a few reasons, I think, but good news.
Yeah. I think this is, he's, you know, I don't watch a ton. I'm not going to pretend I watch a ton of, TNA, but what I do watch, he is a perfect AEW talent. I mean, he's got personality and all, but he can go.
Yeah. He's great.
And that's, to me, that's the most important thing. If you're coming into AEW, is that your ability to go, because that's what the fans want to see. So
it's where, you know, the best wrestle.
It is where the best wrestle.
It's also kind of funny because it's like, if you don't want to be in TNA anymore, you have to leave the TNA ecosystem, which is the WWE ecosystem. So it's like, if you're trying to get away, like, you can't just go to NXT anymore because you might just end up back over in TNA land. But some good news there. And then some more controversial news. It's not really any news yet. But there was a Chris Jericho update. He has been off TV since mid-April, and we haven't heard like of any creative plans to bring him back or anything like that. But he is signed till the end of the year. This all like came about because Jericho liked, I don't even think he runs his own account, but I think he liked something on Instagram that was about a WWE return. Today, he posted his Royal Rumble entrance on his TikTok. And the fact that he's under AEW till the end of the year makes me think that he was fucking with people. He might end up going back to WWE for all I know. But I think this stirring up is definitely either A, a contract negotiation tactic, or B, now I think because everybody was talking about it, he's just throwing people into a tizzy by posting dumb stuff on on his TikTok account. But you know, Jericho's an interesting one because he's obviously he was their first champion. He's been wildly important. Even when the on-screen stuff hasn't been great, his presence backstage and helping young talents. I know like a lot of people don't love how often his feuds go way too long and like obviously his political views and stuff like that, but like people don't seem to have much of a problem with like the person that he is interpersonally backstage, and he obviously has tons of wrestling knowledge. So it's a tricky one because I think he has plenty of value. I just don't know how much of that value is in an on-screen capacity anymore. I could see him doing a final WWE run because he kind of feels like he deserves it. I feel like he'll probably get offers from both, and it's just what he wants to do. Like, I think my guess is Tony Khan has learned because we've seen so much less of it on TV. Like, we don't need this older generation. Like, we don't need the Jeff Jarretts and all that. Like, we're good. But, like, pretending he has no value to AEW, I think is wildly off base. So I'm kind of intrigued by this one. Like, it would make sense if he wanted to wrap his career in WWE. They obviously share political alignments. They made that all very, very clear. But that's something that never seems to bother Jericho. So I am kind of intrigued. I don't feel like it's a monumental loss either way. And I don't feel like it's a monumental gain for WWE because they have enough people in their 50s who are mediocre at this now. It's like the whole top of their card. Your thoughts on Chris Jericho?
So I'll give my initial thought is I just think he's fucking around. It's Jericho. Yeah. I think he loves that. He knows the game better than anyone. You want people talking about you when you're not on screen, when you're not doing something. And everyone sure as shit is talking about him right now. It's very smart. That being said, that doesn't mean I don't, you know, like you said, doesn't mean he's not going to go back to WWE. It's just, it doesn't mean he is. I think either way, that like had nothing to do with it. I agree with everything you said. I think he has less value to WWE than he does to AEW because AEW can use him in the background a lot more.
Yeah, I think so.
I was listening to In the Weeds today with Joel and Jeremy. And they said something that I agree with, which is,
oh no,
I know it's terrible. What was I'm going to say it was Jeremy saying it. So then
that's
it's okay.
Fair. Okay. Respect.
If you're Chris Jericho, what is the value of going back to WWE? And everyone's looking at it through almost like a retirement. Like if you're not thinking retirement, that's a whole different discussion. But even then that becomes, why are you going back to WWE? Because he has a lot of creative control in AEW. He can do basically whatever he wants. He's not going to have that in WWE.
As creative input. He does not have creative control. No, it's fine. I'm just being silly.
I know people, but like he can do whatever he wants in AEW essentially.
And I think to your point on that, to be honest, I feel like if you were going to do a nostalgia pop thing at this stage, the person you come back for is Kevin Owens, and he's going to be out for like another year probably. He just had that surgery too, so I'm like, even the timing of that, like if I'm thinking Jericho nostalgia, that's one of the first places I'm going, is like Festival of Friendship, Kevin Owens type stuff, list guy. I'm sure they would want to do Y2J stuff, but like to me Kevin Owens is like the dance partner that's currently there that I would want to see him with. So that even the nostalgia that you're talking about, like a big piece of that just doesn't line up for me from a timing standpoint because KO is just out.
Yeah. And I guess my thing is if you go back to WWE, so let's assume if he's doing anything, he's looking down the barrel of retirement. He's of that age because I don't think if he's doing full-time run, like for an extended period of time, I definitely don't understand WWE because you are not going to be put anywhere close to a real real booking there. I just don't see it happening.
His body also can't do it. Retirement part-timer run.
If he's doing retirement, the thought of WWE is he can go to Rumble. It's in Saudi, so I don't know why, but he can do Rumble. He get his WrestleMania moment again. Like, he can do all that stuff. However, if he's looking at WWE and just the way they handled the Cena retirement, I would much rather retire in AEW than I would WWE. I mean, look at Sting's retirement run versus Cena's.
Sure.
And I think if he stays with AEW, he has a lot more possibility of running through all the weird gimmicks he wants to run through in his reach to go to retire. Because knowing him, and I'm not criticizing him, but I think this, he's going to want to basically, I could be wrong, but I have a feeling he's the kind of guy who'd almost want to do a rundown of his career slightly, being like, I'll start with Lionheart, then I'll go to Y2J.
My God, then I'll go like to, I've been watching that for years.
Well, he actually, you're right, he has been kind of doing that in AEW a little bit. So it's a weird, I'm with them. I don't see what, if you're WWE, you're bringing him back. I think they're bringing him over just so that he's not with AEW. And I don't see it from his point of view, but money is money. And if he just wants to have his one last run where the majority of his matches are recorded and filmed and the majority of his career between WCW and WWE, it's not me to criticize. I mean, that's your,
sure,
if he wants his whatever, but I just think if you're going to go out, Tony Khan is going to be a lot more likely to let you do whatever the hell you want on the way out.
The interesting thing with Jericho is he's said, like, he doesn't have like a dream retirement program. Wrestlers say shit, so I'm not like putting a ton of stock in it, but he's like, I don't have like a, this is how I want to retire thing in mind. And he's such a, like, to his credit, he's such a textbook guy of like, I could see him wanting to put someone over on his way out. Like, I really do. Like, as much of a screen hog as he can be, as much as like, I hate that Brian Keith and Big Bill didn't get over, like they are not listed as a part of the learning tree on the website anymore. And thank God. But I could see him being the type of guy who's like, let me do a program with someone that's a best of three. He wins the first one, I win the second one. Dude wins the third one at a retirement match, and that's how we go out. Like, I could see him being that kind of guy because he is like he's very pro wrestling by the book with some of the ways that he thinks about things. Sometimes it's a little much. Sometimes it's too much screen time. But like in that specific way, he tends to be pretty true to pro wrestling.
And I will also say before we wrap this up, yes, his last several years in AEW were more downs than ups for a lot of people. I enjoyed some of it more than others. Like, I enjoyed the learning tree hell of a lot. I just thought that was silly, and that's the kind of stuff cracks me up. But you cannot deny how important, how critical he was for AEW the first, like, 3 years. Especially. So,
and he is someone who I've heard, like, one, he's a really good backstage communicator. Like, I said it a couple weeks ago when the MVP Mike Bailey stuff broke. Like, MVP, the first thing he did was go clear the air with Chris Jericho. That was, like, the first thing he did when he got to AEW. And Chris Jericho received that. There was a time when Sean was getting no AEW interviews, and Chris Jericho was like, why don't we do interviews with you? And he was like, I don't know, I've requested them. Jericho ironed that out. He ironed out the Matt Cardona thing with GCW and ROH. Like, he's really, really good at that. And that's something that AEW, who has had locker room problems backstage, can use. The other place that I've heard he's had value is, like, here's the thing about the learning tree that was so, it was such a slog to sit through the middle to the end of it. I was actually in on it in the beginning, and then it got banned. But when you're in a live arena, limited as his physical abilities were, that motherfucker knows how to work a crowd. Like, until the end where it was getting really bad, like, At a regular Dynamite, people got tired of it on pay-per-views, but at a regular Dynamite, people were booing in the places they were supposed to boo. They were cheering in the places they were supposed to cheer. They were biting in the places that they were supposed to on near falls. Like, he knows ring psychology so well, and there's a lot of really young talent there. Like, and even like the Will Ospreys of the world who are not young and do understand ring psychology, like, still feel a need to work on that aspect of their game with newer styles so that it doesn't get lost. And I think you're going to see a lot, whichever way he goes. I could also see him being like a producer in NXT. Like, that guy understands that brand for sure. But like, I think you're going to see a lot of that from Chris Jericho. And that's where I think the value of him sticking around AEW might happen. But we've got a lot more to talk about with this episode of AEW Dynamite. We had one match that was a half hour of the damn show. So we're going to talk all about that. It was fantastic. Great main event with the women. MJF's trying to set Mark Briscoe on fire because he got had last Wednesday. It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. So we're going to get into all of that and more as we are opening the Forbidden Door this weekend. But before we do, I was on this little program called the Shining Wizards podcast on Monday. We were talking all about MJF. And that happens to be the very network that we're on, Ryan. I don't know if you know this.
No,
but this I stopped is by. For a little segment called Kate's Corner. It was fun. It was inappropriate. I was a rated R superstar, if you would. But I had a lot of fun over there. We are a part of the Shining Wizards Network. And there are a lot of other great shows here on the Shining Wizards Network. And we're not going to yap at you about them. But we're going to let the shows yap in a pre-recorded form at you about themselves. Which is a gift. As Ryan pulls up.
I was waiting to see how long I could have you just. I went. There you go.
It's turning into a church sermon.
All right. So what I do here, Kate, is I pull up the commercial overlay.
Hi, Jesse Ozog. We'll wave at you when I get back.
We'd like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in every Monday night to listen to The Shining Wizards. If you'd like to continue to support us outside of listening, we've got a few ways for you to do that. If you shop at Amazon, go over to amazon.shiningwizards.com, do your shopping as usual, and when you make your purchase, a little bit of that purchase price will go back to support the show. If you like to wear t-shirts, merch.shiningwizards.com will take you to our Pro Wrestling Tees store, where we've got over a dozen great designs from over 11 years of professional wrestling podcasting. You can become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/wizardspodcast, where each and every week we call out your name as one of our show producers, and the more you support us, the more things that you're entitled to receive, and believe me, they are fantastic. If you can't support us monetarily, if you don't shop at Amazon, that's absolutely fine. Continue to listen to us wherever you listen to us on the World Wide Web, and make sure you like, rate, review, subscribe, do all that good stuff. Doesn't cost you anything, helps us out, and we can continue to bring you the love fest that is The Shining Wizards.
What's up, folks? It's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Philly Ray, inviting all of you to check out the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Join us as we cover all things current in the world of pro wrestling, as well as paying homage to the old school, the squared circle. So listen in and find out why we are the recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting. Find us on all social media platforms and anywhere you get your podcast from. And as always, we are the proudest members of the Shining Wizards Network and Rant Entertainment Media.
Are you tired of being lied to every day by the mainstream media?
Do you want to know what's really going on in the world?
Do you want to make up your own mind about things and not be told what to think or say?
Then listen to Inconclusive Breakdown, a weekly anti-PC look at the world of entertainment and current events brought to you without censorship or filters.
You can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts, BitChute, and on ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
And also, we're a proud member of the Shining Wizards Network.
Got 30 minutes to kill?
Come check out 30 Screams or Less, where we review a horror movie in 30 minutes or less. We cover new movies and old ones, too.
We'll give our honest thoughts on the movie, good or shit, as well as a rating of each one that we watch.
New episodes weekly, available on the Shining Wizards Network and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Corey.
Come check us out at 30 Screams or Less.
Do G'day guys, my name is Thomas, one half of the Brocast podcast. With our podcast, we go back and watch wrestling events from WWE, WWF, WCW, ECW, AEW, and many other wrestling promotions. You can check us out on Twitter at The Brocast, that's THEBROKAST, and you can also download all episodes on Apple Podcasts, Castbox, Castro, and many other podcast apps.
You like your music heavy? Then check out Radioactive Metal on the Shining Wizards Network. For over 16 years now, Radioactive Metal has been one of the longest running podcasts. Over the years, we've interviewed some legendary metal acts, had some awesome discussions, and cranked a hell of a lot of tunes. So join your cool Uncle Snowy and his co-host Aaron for the audio mosh pit that is Radioactive Metal here on the Shining Wizards Network.
Well, the action is underway!
What's up, everyone? When on the Shining Wizards Network, be sure to check out Wrestling Night in Canada. If we're not recording another kick-ass podcast,
or playing in punk bands,
or recording kick-ass heavy metal albums,
then we're sitting back, we're grabbing a couple brews, and going over everything to do in the world of pro wrestling.
Because we're from Winnipeg, you idiots.
The Mark Order Podcast is the only show you need if you're looking for dedicated coverage of everything AEW on the Shining Wizards Network. Join us live on YouTube every Wednesday night at 10:15 p.m. Eastern after Dynamite to chat along with the show. If you can't join us live, listen to us on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on all social channels at Mark Order Pod and use the hashtag #JoinTheMarkOrder. Because if you don't find us,
we will find you.
I'm Kevin Rogue.
I'm Al Day.
And we're a couple of down under pounders that co-host Rogue Day Dots, an action figure collecting podcast where we talk about, well, just about anything that tickles our fancy at any given moment.
We're grumpy old men, and sometimes people get on our nerves. And when you get on our nerves, guess what? You get off the lawn.
Get off my lawn, asshole! We also go on a little bit of a mission. We go back and we're grading every wrestling figure line that's out there. I'm talking LJNs, I'm talking Jacks, I'm talking Hasbros. Who doesn't like a little Hulkaplex? It's a Gorilla Brain Wrestling podcast production found on the Shining Wizards Network.
I'm Duke Bags.
Kevin Rogue.
And together we are the co-hosts of your Duke and Rogue. If you want to hear about some terrible wrestling shows, we got you covered.
Well, we talk about good ones, too.
We're currently talking about the death of WCW.
I know what we're fucking talking about! Sometimes we get guest spots, like from the Taskmaster. I like to listen to the Year of Duke and Rogue podcast. They're funny guys. I like when they talk about the Narch plows. I like Narch plows. That's a good move. And I like the Dungeon of Doom. You know, sometimes I call my butt the Dungeon of Doom. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Oklahoma.
Let me tell you a little bit about my favorite wrestling podcast. All right. It's a podcast for two men. Two men, Duke Banks, Kevin Rowe. They talk about professional wrestling. It's a man's sport. All right. And who better to talk about a man's sport than Duke Banks? Oklahoma.
Once in a while, Vince Russo stops by.
Oh, you piece of shit! If you're not listening to the Year of Duke and Rogue podcast in the back with the boys, you piece of shit, I don't know what you're doing.
You got a slide one in there?
If you're a man, you're talking about something only a man can do. You're talking about slide one in there. Bro, take the time to slide one in there. All right, bro, you piece of shit. Slide one in there. A Gorilla Brain Wrestling podcast production that you can find on the Shining Wizards Network.
All right, we are so back. This is you. You want a glimpse into my weird little world?
Yes.
As a rib, someone messaged me that they had a scoop for me, and sometimes they tell me stuff that's real, and like I would say it's like 60-40, it's sarcastic to real. And they messaged me a scoop that Sean already posted as a hot tip, I think, to see if I would pass it along to Sean. And it was up like 6 hours. And I said, this was actually already posted on Fightful Select. And they said, I know. So there you go. There you go.
Maybe
looking through maybe my DMs. Trying
to see if you read Fightful Select yourself.
I mean, there's a good chance I didn't see it. It's on Fightful Select. But anyway, we're going to get into this episode of AEW Dynamite. So chat along with us. Now that we are properly here, we can say hi to one LT photo and we can say hi, Jesse Ozog. Hi, Jesse. I'll give you a double wave because if Joe were here, he'd be waving to you. One LT photo is wearing a Shining Wizards t-shirt that you won. That rules. We had a couple of those last week as well, I think, but I just got the hiccups. So let's plow through the shit. Hopefully it was just like one, but we get this opening promo from Will Ospreay, who is a little, dare I say, Seinfeldian in this wonderful hometown adjacent love that he gets. He thanks Glasgow for lifting him through the hardest stretches of his life. He talks about growing up in front of these fans, saying that he's like known them for decades. And now he's facing the fear. And now they're with him as he faces the fear of what Jon Moxley did to him with the Death Riders' help. There's also some sausage roll business that happens in this. And he takes a shot at vegans, to which I say, fuck you, Will Ospreay. Okay? Fuck you, buddy.
You're just not elevated.
I'm so elevated. Okay?
Apparently not.
Whoa! Jon Moxley and the Death Riders come in from the parking lot, to which I say I would just simply leave because they're coming all the way in from the parking lot and you could just go away. But Mox, Claudio, Yuta, and Marina arrive. You have Ospreay challenging Mox, saying fight your own battles, because that's what's going to happen in the cage. But when the Death Riders close in a classic go-home segment to a pay-per-view, you get Jet Speed and what's left of Hiroshi Tanahashi hitting the ring, who he's actually looked pretty good, but his run to the ring when he has no knees is tough. But he did pretty well during the G1. He looked a lot better than he had before. But this cage match is going to be wild. Everybody came out here. And later, even more people come out. But I'll segue that into this first match with the Death Riders versus Jet Speed and Hiroshi Tanahashi. You get a classic dragon screw leg whip from Tana. Classic standing shooting star press from Mike Bailey. FUU to chance ringing out loud. Claudio swinging Mike Bailey, which is probably one of the easier ones he's done. But Kevin Knight drop kicking him mid-spin. Marina getting ejected here after some cheap shots. And Ospreay physically carries her to the back, which was a cute touch. But we have Tanahashi hitting the sling blade on Yuta. Jet Speed cleaning house here. And Tana hitting the high fly flow for the win. So all of that good stuff leading to this match. And then I'll talk about the post-match after that, because there's a lot to recap here. And we don't have that many segments to talk about tonight. So what did you think of the opening and the match? Because that happened more or less pretty clean.
Was I the only, ignoring people who saw this pre-recorded, was I the only one who didn't know Bryan Danielson would be on commentary?
Oh, I'm so glad that you mentioned that. It was announced yesterday or earlier today. I think it was because Taz said he couldn't make it because he's having knee issues and it's not good for the flight. So he's tending to some doctor's appointments. So I don't know if it was like a last minute sub or that was always the plan, but that's the sequence in which it was announced.
Okay. Which was just a cool thing to see him be there.
Very cool. He's so great on commentary. Like, he's so great at merging his knowledge with his passion.
Oh, absolutely. There was a couple moments where he just said a few things here. Like, okay, if he wanted to do this, he'd be good at it. I don't want him necessarily to do it because I think he's got other things going on, but he has that like Nigel skill of without the, minus the heelishness of, and Taz skill too, of explaining the theory, the thought behind a wrestler's move and their motivation.
He's amazing at that. Like because he's so gentle with how he weaves it in.
Oh, and he's reuniting with Renee on pre-show. That is awesome.
He's got to be on ZSJ and Nigel. Like, I'll have it no other way. Oh, my
God. yeah, you booked
that. I will say, like, he's been great on commentary. If that was something he wanted to do. He was on commentary when the Cruiserweight Classic was happening. Like, he did it a little bit in WWE when he wasn't cleared, and he's quite good. Like, he's consistently very, very good at this. So I'm with you on that.
So, I mean, this was, as you said, a very go-homey moment of, hey, everybody in this match come out. Everybody doing something. Get your butt out here. But I was okay with it. You got the Ospreay home country, whatever you want to say it, cheer, and he got to name local places he's been to and stuff like that, and that's always fun. Him running with Mina on his shoulder was hilarious because he had like a special run. It was kind of like but he had someone on his shoulder, so it was kind of like one on, it was great.
Cartoonish.
Very cartoonish. Yes, that's what you expect of these, you know, these matches, which I'm always here for. A lot of, like, I always call it a clusterfuck in the best kind of way. These guys are just all really good at their jobs. When Ospreay brought out the body bag, all I could say is, if this isn't Darby, I don't even know who I am anymore. And I was just as excited when Darby popped out of that thing to like fight. So like the whole thing just went perfectly. It's okay to do these as your go homie segment. Like, I get why it's done. It kind of gets everyone involved. It shows who's around. I love what they're doing with it. This isn't the first time they've done this, but it is one of my more favorite AEW tropes of like, they won't clear me, so we're doing lights out. And I'm like, no one has explained how they're all going to fit in the cage.
No,
but I'm okay with that. But the whole thing, and the Death Riders kind of are the perfect opponents for it. Is kind of funny when you look at the two sides how different they are being presented currently, and you have like these badass Death Riders and these more fun wrestlers.
They're so playful. Cool, they're, yeah, so like, yeah, they're like such a lighthearted thing, which honestly, like, when you have so many people out. Like, I was thinking about this earlier because I keep forgetting, like, oh, and then this person's also out. Like, you've got Orange Cassidy, you've got Kenny Omega, Will Ospreay's back now, and Kenny's back now. But, like, they were off television for weeks. Eddie Kingston is off. Jay White is off. Like, there are tons of people still on the bench. And when Orange Cassidy is out, I always go back to something that feels very AEW is to have the conglomeration, to have your Kyle O'Reilly's, your Orange Cassidy's of actually a badass wrestler, but very silly. And I wouldn't say these guys are silly, but they're definitely like more playful, feel good. And the Death Riders always bring such like a darkness to the presentation that you're right. Like, we did get like a fun contrast here for sure.
So yeah, I mean, that's kind of all. You know, that in so many, it's so weird because this is something that happens a lot with these go home moments, is not a lot of significance to what it went on.
No,
because nothing really changed, just fun. And I'm here for fun. And the good guys getting to be the good guys and the bad guys getting to be the bad guys, and each side showing a little bit of intelligence and or ruthlessness. And I enjoyed it. And Jetspeed, I will keep saying this, as a team that was thrown together essentially at one point, the fact of how well they've gelled is just awesome.
It AEW finds magic in that kind of stuff a lot. Like, bro, when you have so many high work rate wrestlers like this, Brodito, I mentioned the conglomeration before, like there's so many times that they stumble into greatness just because they have such a ridiculous roster. I'll also just say with this, like, it's so funny to me. I've liked the Death Riders and Jon Moxley so much more since he's dropped the title. I know it wasn't like that long ago, but part of what's great about Jon Moxley is him just being a badass wrestler. And there's still been shenanigans, of course, but like, I feel like we've just gotten to see more of, like, him and Kevin Knight was great last week. Like, I just want to see Jon Moxley wrestle for real instead of like sitting around waiting. So when the Death Riders have other people on the other side that are giving the other people something to do around this, it's a lot more palatable because I'm not like, well, why are the baby faces fucking idiots that don't prepare for things like that? So also just in general, like I've liked the Death Riders way, way more. And I still like when Moxley came out, all I could think about was last week when he was like, Tanahashi? Hiroshi Tanahashi?
Yeah.
And when I saw him come in today, it like warmed my heart. But even after this, more shenanigans as the Young Bucks super kick Osprey, but Roddy and KOR chase them off. The Death Riders thinking they've captured Marina in a bag, but as you noted, it's Darby Allin who explodes out of it and attacks. And Darby with that coffin drop off the mezzanine was ridiculous. So the face is standing tall, the heels retreating. I don't care about the wrestling math because that it doesn't matter who wins that cage match. That's going to be stupid fun. And probably partly just stupid. So we'll see how that goes. But
unless it's just all of them trying to figure out how everyone gets in the cage, and then we got a problem.
Then it's an issue. Then it's an issue. But we'll figure it out. They'll figure it out. I don't know. But you mentioned that this is like such a classic go homey thing that they do. I don't mind it when not every segment is that. They used to have go homes when every single segment was that. And something I liked about tonight's go home, we had completely different things showing up all over the place. And I appreciated that nothing felt the same. But we get this in-ring segment between Adam Copeland and Christian Cage, and my head went, oh, Sean is going to get what he wants, because Sean Rossap has been saying for months he wants the Sting and Luger archetype to come back and the, yeah, he's an asshole, but he's my asshole thing to happen. But Tony Schiavone brings out Copeland and Christian interrupts. We get holy shit chants. We get a sing-along for Adam Copeland's theme, which never gets old. And Copeland saying that Christian's an asshole, but he's his asshole, and that's what he needs, essentially. And I like what Christian does here because he says, I haven't changed. I can give you a handshake agreement to this exact point, and that's as far as I'm willing to commit. And I really, really like it because it wasn't like, so many times we get this, maybe I can change thing, and it feels apologetic in a way or feels incomplete. And what I like is Christian is like, no, I know exactly who I am still, but I'm also smart and I understand where we're at. Like, you and I were one of the best, and he says the best tag teams ever. And I know you enough to know that we can make this work for this period of time with this specific mission. I thought that was great. But Kit Sabian, who looks like me in college, Mama Wayne interrupts. And we get this unfortunate news from Nick Wayne, who appears to taunt Copeland. He broke his foot and he's going to be out for several weeks. But he says he's always a step ahead. And it's revealed that Killswitch is going to take Nick Wayne's place. And they did this cool vignette where Killswitch was coming back to life. And it kind of looked like Jack Perry might be bringing him back that way. And we have Copeland and Christian just knocking down the moment immediately, as they would do. But I'm so glad for those who don't know, like, Killswitch was not like, oh, I tore an ACL. He was having some pretty severe health issues that were keeping him out of the ring. And it's a good thing that he's still up and available in life, much less in a wrestling capacity. So, just very thankful that he's okay, much less can make a wrestling in-ring return. But it felt to me in that vignette like that jacket looked awful familiar. Looked a lot like Jack Perry there. So what did you think of what we got from Cope and Christian, and also the return of Luchasaurus and possibly Jack Perry here?
Sorry, I had to go back and look at the video because I didn't notice the jacket, but you are right. That is a very Jack Perry, which
is very Perry.
Would be perfect for him to return in this.
I would love that. I would love that.
He's going to have to be Luchasaurus. He can't be Killswitch because now he's, you know, going against Christian. So I'm all for that.
He was also in the green mask, not the black one. So he's a good dinosaur again.
So I'll have a question after I do my... Well, let me answer my question first. Will Jack Perry come back at Forbidden Door and screw over Christian and Copeland?
I don't know, because God, something about that just feels like it's ripe for All Out and not Forbidden Door. In my opinion, just the timing of it. But I don't know. Like, you could certainly do that. You could certainly do that. It would be a really easy way to put the titles just on FTR instead.
Okay. So that was, but so back to Christian and Copeland. So they said, I'm pretty sure Copeland must listen to you guys, because he quoted Sean directly with, he's my asshole.
He hates Dirt Sheets notably too. So somebody else must have gotten that to him, because it was verbatim what Sean says every week.
Yeah.
Or he's sneaky and he actually loves Dirt Sheets.
I think he secretly loves it. It is the... I loved, you know, having been a Sting fan, I loved the Luger and Sting relationship. So I'm good with that. And this is who I am, just because there's a couple things here. One, we all have that friend who's just an asshole.
Always a Karen, and she's always back of douche.
And if you don't, then you're the asshole.
You're the asshole.
So we will forever have you've been through them. You've been through so much of them that you're forever going to support them and be by their side. Christian also made a good point of being like, I will be the best tag partner you've ever had. Like saying, like, there's a plus side to this. Like, you're getting the best version of me. The smartest part of this is that if they want to, they don't have to, but if they want to, this can be the opening stages of a slow personality change for Christian, so that you don't rush it. But the more he's around Copeland, the more he becomes the Christian that was with Copeland, because that happens to friends. They get back with their old group and all of a sudden they're like they were back then. So you could see, and if they do it at the right pace, no one will be like, what the hell? Why did Christian change? It will have just happened.
I would like for it to go the other way. I would like to see Adam Copeland's I want it to be a bad influence on Copeland.
Well, let me be clear here. Just because Christian is becoming more the Christian that was with Copeland doesn't mean that they'll necessarily be good guys. Because Edge and Christian weren't always good. They
could have been awesome. What do you mean?
But they were assholes at points too.
Yes, they were. That's my favorite version of them. And I feel like this is a one last time run. So I want to see my favorite version of them personally. Like, that's just a me thing. But I agree. And I like that. I agree with what you're saying. And I like the idea of it being gradual. It doesn't have to be a personality switch. So I'm a fan of making it seem like how actual human beings act, you know?
Yep.
So good stuff. Good stuff there. Unfortunate news about Nick Wayne. This whole roster, man. These poor guys.
Was that new too? Did no one know that?
I did not. Okay. I can't speak for anybody else, but I don't think it'd been reported by anywhere. I think it just sucks. So, because he was on like a really good trajectory, it felt like.
Yeah, he was killing it.
You've seen probably the most extreme version of Metalhead Kate in picture form.
I met that version of Metalhead Kate too.
You did. I don't think like that specific
That's true.
But that era of me. Kip Sabian was dressed as like that version of me on a Tuesday. Like not going to a show probably, but like Metalhead Kate and Kip Sabian, very tight black pants, hair almost identical. When I saw the hair, I was like, Kip Sabian saw a picture of me. I don't appreciate it. He copped my look from like 2008.
100% was you.
Right? Thank you.
It's not.
I'm alarmed by it. Makes me itchy.
It's not even. Yeah. There's
the hair
we're
is
not
ridiculous.
Even kidding.
Yeah. It's obscene. But let's keep moving along. Mark Briscoe, at this point in the evening, seemed to have flown across the ocean to say, kill that fool, to MJF, which I appreciated. But we get this really good backstage between Ricochet and MJF and Gates of Agony, and they make a business deal that I thought was great. He proposes that they take out Briscoe for him. Ricochet accepts this. And they're like, it's a very, look, we have a common enemy. I love that MJF is like, I don't really trust bald people. And the idea of me bald gives me agita. That's what MJF says, which cracked me up because he's Jewish. I'll say that is booby behavior. Agita. Such like an old lady choice of words, but it absolutely cracked me up. Obviously this comes into play in a much more severe way later. So let's talk about that now, and we'll circle back to the incredible tag match we got. But we get Hangman Page hitting the ring. He's pissed off, calls MJF a coward, and promises at Forbidden Door he's going to step on him with his size 12 ostrich leathers and stick them up MJF's checkered ass, which is just a phenomenal turn of phrase. The Adam Page pop is becoming a thing. Like right now, this guy is the guy in the company. And I always got kind of nervous because I was like, with the run Ospreay's on, with Kenny back, with Swerve being as popular as he is, like, is Hangman ever going to feel like the guy just because of everything that's around? He's the guy. Like the second he walks out there, the crowd is hanging on every word. I love to see it. But MJF appears on Titantron, and boy, oh boy, he has Mark Briscoe tied up, and Mark Briscoe does a phenomenal job selling. Like, he looked like somebody who actually got the shit kicked out of him and tied up. Like, almost like he was drugged, maybe, but he had, like, he did a really good job with this, like, this daze that he was in. And MJF pulls out gasoline, which means that I think Eddie Kingston is returning tomorrow because that's the only way to make it happen. But he says that if Adam Page leaves the ring, something awful is going to happen, or the ring announcer says that to him. And he demands that the title match be no DQ match, or title can change on a DQ, title can change on a countout, and if MJF loses, he doesn't have to cash in his contract. And Ricochet has a lighter. I love that because Ricochet had the scissors, like as an unhinged maniac. Now they switch that to a flame here. And Hangman, at the count of four, agrees to save Mark Briscoe. And he storms backstage, attacking Ricochet with a chair, which I think is great because I think maybe we're getting another tag or another title program following MJF with this. But he is told that MJF is already gone. And I just think there's something really great about this guy who has been saying, oh, if Hangman does it, he's still your hero. But if I do it, and it's progressed to the point where he says, oh, if Hangman burns, like this is the linchpin, because this is the worst thing that Hangman's ever done. Oh, if Hangman burns down a house, he's still your hero. It's Hangman did nothing wrong. But if I try to burn down a person to get what I want, suddenly I'm the bad guy, is like kind of perfect MJF behavior. Now, I think these stipulations are absolutely going to fuck him over, and Hangman will be leaving as champion, and he will leave with nothing. There'll be no contract. Maybe Mark Briscoe is the one that cost him, whatever. Like, I think all of this was set up to design for this, for Max to fail here. But I think it would be very funny if he lost and then lost again. I'm all for that. But this was an intense segment, and I like that MJF said, oh, congratulations, you outsmarted me for 5 seconds and goaded me into cashing in my contract. And then he just turns it right back around. I was like, holy shit. Okay. Like, this is a new level of diabolical for Max. What did you think of this? Because this was loaded.
Well, I'm going to quote Big G. That's attempted murder.
It is, but so is arson, kind of. Because no one was in the house. But yeah.
So... First of all, I loved it. Love the segment. You're right. I like the way MJF turned this around. I like that the whole layout was fine. And, you know, Ricochet made it funny, and then he made it hilarious when Hangman grabbed him in the face he made and the reaction. But now I ask...
He's been so unbelievable with that stuff, man.
But now I ask the question. What stops Hangman from saying, oh, by the way, I'm not going to wrestle you unless you re-put up your contract.
Well, because Hangman is an honorable man and he's already behaved this way before, I think is the implication. He's not going to do that because of the implication.
Fair, because of the implication, but... How do I want to say this? MJF went about it in a very dishonorable way. So why doesn't Hangman just say, fuck it? Mark, you know, Mark Briscoe's alive. You don't have him. Never mind. Change my mind.
Because he's high honor Arthur Morgan and MJF is low honor or Arthur Morgan. Yes, I keep quoting the one video game I know.
You do.
Tim McFell is so upset he agrees with you.
See? The right before
maybe
the
he will. Maybe he will.
No, I have a feeling they won't, because I think people will be complaining about the back and forth of the nature of the contract. But to me, it would be something to say right before they're supposed to wrestle. I talked to Tony Khan. You don't put that up. We don't have a match tonight. And
I think you might see something that looks like MJF loses, he cashes it in, and then Hangman says, oh, DQs, the title doesn't change, and low blows him and pins him immediately, or something like that. Like, I think Hangman might still go to a depth that's not necessarily a good guy to stymie MJF. Because it feels very much to me like the story is MJF's world is falling apart. Like, no hurt syndicate. He's going to lose his hair to Mystico. Like, it feels a lot like it's
going. Why is he willing to go bald?
Yeah, just go get another transplant from, come on, MJF going bald and wearing a wig every week is like up the middle base hit for MJF. I feel like you're going to see
the most wrestling thing of all time, but still.
It's so wrestler heel to do that. But you know what's funny? When I was on the Shining Wizards show here on the Shining Wizards Network on Monday, when I was talking to Matt about what we were going to cover in the segment, Matt was like, I kind of want to talk about this Hanger and MJF thing. It feels to me like Sting and Flair. And I said, Oh, that's so funny, because when I was thinking of Mark Briscoe and MJF, I was thinking Dusty and Flair. And we both like pinpointed MJF as the same guy in two very different feuds, but simultaneously. So it's very interesting what they're doing with him right now. I'm intrigued to see where it goes, for sure. But Ryan, I just want to say here that I would never set you on fire. I wouldn't do it.
I might.
You might set you on fire?
No, you.
Oh, well, that's rude.
I mean, why not?
I mean, I've got several reasons. But you know what I would do? I would launch you through a table right at the bell. That's what I would do.
See, that's just as mean, in my opinion.
Than being set on fire?
Listen, I didn't say I was using logic.
Yeah, well, neither did they, because Bandito was trying to go for a pinfall after the bell rings. But we get a phenomenal match between FTR and Brodito. And I really love that Brodito gets to be a part of this triple threat, because it feels like I was like, I don't want either of these teams to lose. Like, I feel like FTR has to win for the story, but Brodito is such a crowd favorite and they're so much fun that they don't go overkill with these draws. And I felt like this was an inspired choice. But you get some really technical exchanges early in this with Bandito and Dax. And I love that we got to see like Tekker Dito a little bit. I thought that was fun. And you have Brody as a hot tag is disgusting. Like, what's so fun to me about Brodito is either of them as a hot tag is really fun. But Brody King especially, because he's just like, here's some chops, here's some sentons. You got Big Stoke with the pipe that he borrowed from, I can only assume, Riho. Cutting off Bandito with that. He's got some loaded equipment on the outside with this, but Brody surviving the spike pile driver, Bandito hitting the frog splash tribute to Eddie, all these near falls. I love matches with 900 near falls. Like, that's just me. I love it. And then it's 5 minutes of just insanity. You've got Brody splashing everybody. You get King intercepting the shatter machine, which I thought was such a clever spot. And in the closing seconds, FTR smashes Brody through the table. I love Danielson saying, like, Brody doesn't even know where he is right now, or he'd be going for a pin with only a minute left. But, like, he probably didn't even hear the announcement with, like, the state of mind he was in. I thought that was really good. But Bandito counters Cash Wheeler by just basically stepping out of the way, like, just getting out of the way of the table, and Cash fucking goes flying through the table. And the bell rings, though, and we have a time limit draw. And after, Bandito's like, I got him. And everyone's like, oh no, it's over. But Tony Khan announces post-match that there will be a triple threat tag match at Forbidden Door with FTR, Brodito, and the Hurt Syndicate. That's a really fun combination of guys. Like, that's a tag triple threat that is good. I think probably Brody King's taking the pin in that, unfortunately, but that's okay, because it protects the Hurt Syndicate, as I'm guessing, if FTR beats them. This match was a very fast 30 minutes. Like, late in it, you knew that they were probably going for a draw or close to it, but it moved. Like, this was not like a hurry up kind of thing. Like, this was very, very fun. What says you, Ryan?
That was a lot of blood by Brody King.
That was... Somebody nicked an artery.
Yes, so much so that they had to reference it to be like, the ref has even gone over and tried to wipe the blood. Like, there's that much blood. This, again, we said it with Jetspeed, but we're going to say it, Brodito. AEW just seems to nail putting teams together. Like, they somehow realize, like, they look at two guys and go, you'll fit. And they do. Because somehow this team works. Now, that might just be that both guys are extremely talented, so it helps that, you know, just have two awesome guys. I didn't know how, like, at no point in this match could I figure out the way they were going to end this. I'm like, both teams, like you said, both teams should win. Both teams should lose, because it they don't do time limit draws a ton, but they do them. And I like it, because it's like, why have a time limit if you never go to the draw?
They do.
You know, if you're going to have them, use them every now and again. it also makes the triple threat, it makes the Hurt Syndicate match a little more interesting, because now you're like, I genuinely don't know how it's going to end, because it was Hurt Syndicate versus FTR. I kind of think it'd be Hurt Syndicate. Now I'm like, well, you have this whole other team there that could either steal the win or cost the champs the title. Like, there's, they finally made it complicated. So I'm all for that. I would say, I often wonder if wrestlers pick their gear if they know someone's gonna bleed, because FTR's like tannish, whitish gear really picked up Rhodey's blood.
FTR seems like the kind of team that would do that too. You know what I mean?
it worked really well. I think I was sitting there. I was very excited. There were so many near falls. There were moments where I'm like, oh, they're giving this Brodito, and I don't know what FTR is going to do after this, and then reversed it. And to me, the highlight was Stokely looking so mad as they announced that this was going to be a triple threat, as if he expected, you know, FTR to be given the title for some, not war, I should say title shot for some reason. So to him sitting there being like,
the so dad-esque angry. Dramatic pause of the, like, I just need a minute.
Yes.
Had me in stitches. I love that the chat is freaked out that they're agreeing with you so much. It's really fun for me.
I know. I mean, guys, I sometimes make an okay point.
You stumble into them from time to time.
Blindly, but I get there.
I'm with you. I think the triple threat makes it more interesting, and I do think it's time for the Hurt Syndicate to drop. Probably goes to FTR because the story with Cope and Christian is so vivid already. But I would love an upset win, or I would love like Brodito to do something at All Out that puts them right back in line. But I'm excited. I'm excited. One LT photo saying the puppets are from Bulgaria. If you are not up on the me and Alex Pulaski lore of getting puppets, they are from Bulgaria and they are expensive because we're getting bougie puppets and I deserve it.
I will believe it when I see it.
I will too, not because I don't trust Sean, but because I've tried to mail things to Bulgaria up to 4 times at this point and they've never arrived. So I don't know how the export process goes, but hopefully smoother than the import one.
Also, why did you have to go to Bulgaria for puppets?
I was just sending the recommendations that I was sent off of Etsy. And Sean contacted the person and they're in Bulgaria, but they're amazing puppets.
So does like, Maggie know them?
I don't know if she knows them, but they're in her hometown. Like, it's not just Bulgaria. It's where Maggie is in Bulgaria.
I mean, I just assume Bulgaria only has like 10 people, so she must know them.
Let me tell you how confused I was when I got a message from Sean Rossap that says your puppets are from the town that Maggie is in Bulgaria. And I was like, didn't know they were being ordered. Didn't know the vendor was in Bulgaria. I was very confused. Very confused by all of it, but delighted because puppets are.
I expect some world-class puppeteering.
They are like, they're not little like hand puppets. They're the ones with the rods. I think like they're real deal puppets. I think if Sean is silly enough to go through with it, but we will find out, and we will talk about this main event. The ladies in the main event slot with a 17-minute match here. Really, really fun. Just a really, really fun match. You got Monet kind of just out wrestling Alex Windsor, just technique. I thought Danielson was great on commentary with this too, like really putting all of the women over with this. But Athena clowning Tony with some arm drags. You got Tony Storm firing back with Mongolian chops and some really fun comedy spots in here. Athena nearly, she takes the term suicide dive a little too far, but you have a spot with her and Mercedes where Mercedes is like, fine, and holds the ropes for her as she dives through them. And then you have Mercedes taunting on the side, like on the apron, and she just gets booted off, which was really well. Because Alex Windsor hits a cannonball for everybody. And the heels isolate. But we get this Monet tagging to hit a backstab or combo. But Alex Windsor rallying with a blue thunderbomb, which looked really good. I can't remember if I've seen Alex Windsor use the blue thunderbomb, but it looked awesome. But we have Athena surprising Alex Windsor with the O-face for the pin. And I said, man, I really wanted them to just crown Athena. Now, they still might. I was actually thinking about this. There's a really interesting thing that you could do in making Alex Windsor a top heel in the division by having her turn on Toni Storm in some way and having Athena win. But wrestling math tells you that the person who got the pin is probably the one taking the pin at the pay-per-view for the heat's back sake. But a really, really, really fun match. There's clearly something going on between Athena and Mercedes still, which is a bunch of fun. Maybe Athena gets that TBS title after all. We'll see. She still has her ROH title to worry about. Very fun tag match to close the show. What did you think?
I mean, I get why they had Athena and all win, because I get it. Would have liked to see Windsor. You know,
Windsor.
Get a little bit of that, you know, local hometown joy, but I get it. I mean, there's sometimes you have to make the decision. Timeless Tony doing a fat bastard impression was unexpected.
Oh my god, I can't believe I left that. Get in my belly. So well done.
Was just I did not believe, I couldn't believe that she did that, and for no reason.
Truly.
Like, but
she just wanted to do it.
And it, no, this is where Danielson came in handy. Was it Danielson? It might have actually been Excalibur. I might have been given the where I think Danielson said something like mind games, and Excalibur said something like from the master of them, or maybe been Tony. Someone said from the master of it. So like, I like that they established that what she's doing is there's a plan.
Yeah, Danielson was like, I don't know what I'm watching here or whatever. And Shivani very quickly said, mind games, like by the master. Yeah.
Okay, well, Shivani. Yeah, 100%. Okay. Right, yeah. So I like that because, yes, she's insane. Yes, she's crazy. But it's the Orange Cassidy thing where you're like, there's a plan. There's a reason for this. They don't just do this just because. At least once the character gets over, maybe in the initial, but, and that is, they're going to mess with your head. The whole thing is, let me throw my opponent off. And let me tell you something, if I'm fighting someone and they start yelling, get in my belly, I'm going to throw me off.
Certainly the case. This was great. And Danielson also put the Mercedes and Tony match over from All In as well. And I thought that was good because it was just like this very gentle reminder of like, hey, let's remember where this started as a singles program with the other ones that are involved here, right? Like, so just little stuff like that. And then Persephone at ringside. And we get a little shoving match. Persephone looked like she had a stare down with Windsor. So this was a whole bunch of fun, man. And I love when I go to look at match times. The women were 17:10. The Death Riders versus Jet Speed was 11:05. And FTR versus Brodito was obviously a half hour. So when you like factor in commercial breaks and stuff, there was a ton of wrestling on a go home show. And not to play comparisons, you certainly don't get that in WWE, but you also just in general don't always get that. And I really appreciate that. Like, this is Glasgow. I've gone to Newark to see AEW probably 6 times at this point, I would be my guess. Glasgow doesn't get that. So the fact that they got some really memorable pro wrestling and they're getting a collision show that has Isla Dawn on it. Spoilers. Sorry. Plug your ears if you don't want to hear this. Zack Sabre Jr. answers Max Caster's open challenge. Spoiler alert for you. Easy payday at the office for him. Like, I appreciate that they're not just assuming everyone in Glasgow is coming to Forbidden Door, right? Like, they made it special for a crowd that doesn't get to see them a lot. So, some good stuff there. Good episode of Dynamite. Very, very full of top stars in action, which is cool. I like that, but that's our show. Timothy Drake joining us late. Hi, Timothy. Or have you just been hiding in the shadows this whole time? Are you related to JD Drake? I have questions.
Okay, that'd be really cool.
That'd be awesome. I love JD Drake.
Oh, JD Drake's the man. That's not an that would be legitimately very cool.
Hell yeah. But Ryan, I was trying to make a Forbidden Door joke into history, but it's impossible. I don't know. I was going to do a Forbidden Door to other eras thing, but just felt like even too big of a reach for me. And I was reaching. So I'm going to say, hey, you do history. And that's neat. When you're not reading WWE novels, what are you up to?
When I'm not reading WWE novels, you can find me on all our socials at Mark Order Pod. I have a history blog here for history.com at here for history at underscore here for history, depending on the social. I do have something coming. I am trying something a little bit new. So hopefully that comes out in the near future as I finish up with it. So yeah. What about you, Kate? When you're not here,
I'm just yapping about wrestling other places.
Essentially.
Pretty much. I'm at Fightful a lot, on Select on Mondays, on the main channel Tuesdays and Fridays, Wednesdays right here. But I also, not to brag, but 2 weeks in a row have released an entire video. Who am I? On my own YouTube channel. I don't know how and why, but y'all still continue to support me in my one video a month that I release, or more accurately, like six in 1 week, and then I just fall off the planet.
I was going to say, let's be fair here, Kate, it's a weirder release schedule than that.
I don't pace them very well, is what I've learned, but I'm learning. My last one was actually a lot of fun. I did like three things that I was very wrong about with AEW, and this one is just a spotlight on talent that I think are going to have like monster end of this year into next year. I put in the title like number two won't surprise you at all because it's Queen Aminata, but like there's some more hidden gem names on there as well. So you can check my channel out at Miss Kate Fabe. But yeah, I have another video planned. Should I say it and tempt fate?
Do it.
On Friday, I was going to do a video for three things that I think WWE, like creative adjustments that are serving them extremely well. Like, I'll tell you right now, one of them is Solo Sikoa getting to actually have a personality, things like that. So you can check that out. That should be out Friday because I actually have Thursday nights off and I can record things. So that should be out Friday evening. So check that out.
Awesome. And, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, follow me over there. And okay, We'll wrap up. Looking forward to Forbidden Door this weekend. I'm going to try and also get a prediction show in with Cardoza if I can. So stay tuned for that. Enjoy Forbidden Door. We'll talk all about the fallout right here on the Mark Order Podcast next week as Ryan narrates our outro. Ryan?
Yes, see. I put the outro overlay on, and then I scroll all the way down, and I find the thing named outro, and I hit.
The Mark Order Podcast. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.